Monsters, monsters, monsters.
I dreamed that I was in my own house, but there were three new exceptions. Three huge, ugly monsters with long fingernails and long teeth, and they were carrying a chalkboard. They had high-frequency earmuffs. The first one held my hands down. The second one held the chalkboard in his so-called hands firmly. And the third one stuck out his teeth and his claws. He rubbed them against the chalkboard and came down with them against the board. It created the most horrible music I have ever heard. I started screaming and screaming until I couldn't scream anymore. And so I stopped and I caught my breath and I said, "Bug off!"
The author of The Chalkboard Monsters is Barbie Wallace of Mrs. Mayol's Fifth Grade, Harvard Park, Springfield. And the fiendish laugh is Tim's and Toby Veach's dad. And the blood-curdling screech is Toby Veach's of Mrs. Greenwalt's second grade, Ball Chatham Elementary. But the laugh, the scream, or the story could be yours. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Jackie Jackson, where are you?
Tim Veach, I'm over here. What's happened? Why aren't you in class over at Glenwood Ninth Grade there in Chatham?
Well, I was just coming into the studio to record a program with you when a great claw seized me and I was swallowed up by a terrible monster with awful wavy antennas and microphones for ears, or maybe eyes, or...
It's got me too, the phantom of WSSR. We're in its stomach. We're being dissolved. Can't you hear the digestive juices and the awful cries?
Maybe we're giving it a bellyache.
Tim, we're goners. Say your prayers.
Not yet, Jackie. The show must go on. Quick, what are we going to say to all the reading and writing and radio listeners?
Tim, you're a real trooper, but I'm with you. Here's a flashlight. I wanted to say welcome, and that the idea for this program came from Scott Clayton of Mrs. Hobbins' fifth grade down there in Pawnee.
And also Scott Hansen of Mr. Jack's fifth grade, Harvard Park School, Springfield.
And there were other students in other schools that wanted a monster program, too. Oh, and here's that bunch of famous monsters that we listed. Let's read them good and loud over the music. No, it's not music. Over the stomach noises.
The Blob.
The Thing.
Frankenstein.
The Gorgon.
King Kong.
Cyclops.
The Flyman.
Godzilla.
The Minotaur.
Shalab.
The Mutant.
Dr. Octopus.
The Wolfman.
Humbaba.
The Zombie.
Phi Beast.
The Salt-Sucking Monster.
The Mysterians.
Dracula.
The Mummy.
The Hulk.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
It's quieter. Listen.
Maybe the peristalsis has stopped for a few minutes. The stomach walls have quit heaving. I can stand up.
Well, here's a place we can sit. A little slimy. What's the first monster you know of?
Well, the first one, it's over 5,000 years old. It came from Sumeria, and it was written on clay tablets in cuneiform writing. The Sumerians told it, and long before it was ever written down, it was told, and there's many versions of it, and it has a monster in it. It has more than one monster, and it's called, you okay, Tim?
I'm doing all right.
It's called the Gilgamesh Epic, and Gilgamesh is an uppity king, and the gods create Enkidu, who's a wild man monster, in order to subdue the uppity king. And he's a great, huge, hairy man with great horns sticking high out of his head. But Gilgamesh and Enkidu get into a fight, and neither one wins. And so instead of getting rid of Gilgamesh, They both go off together to get rid of a monster called Humbaba. And he's a monster that destroys by fire. We'd call him Volcano Man if he were in Marvel Comics. Here, here's a little that tells about him out of a book called The Gilgamesh Epic by Bernarda Bryson. They could hear the giant heartbeat of Humbaba and smell the smoke from his lungs. With a crashing of timbers and a rolling of loose stones, Humbaba came down upon them. His face loomed among the treetops, creased and grooved like some ancient rock. The breath he breathed withered the boughs of cedars and set small fires everywhere. And so then they begin to fight with Humbaba. Humbaba grasped Gilgamesh by his flowing hair, swung him round and round as if to hurl him through the treetops. But now Enkidu saw his giant ribs exposed, and he thrust his sword into the monster's side. Liquid fire gushed from the wound and ran in small streams down the mountainside. Gilgamesh fell to the earth and lay still, trying to breathe. And Humbaba, meanwhile, is trying to kill off Gilgamesh, Enkidu, but Enkidu manages to kill him. The giant loosened his hold on Enkidu. He cried out. The earth reverberated with the sound, and distant mountains shook. Now Enkidu perceived that the monster drew in a long breath in order to spew forth his last weapon, the searing fire that would consume the king. He leaped on the demon and with many sword thrusts released the fire so that it bubbled harmlessly among the stones. So that's the way, in the very first epic, the earliest story of any sort that we have, a monster, the Volcano Man, Humbaba, has been killed.
Well, then there are all those monsters in the Bible, Leviathan and Behemoth.
And the giant Goliath.
The ancient Greek legends are filled with monsters.
There's a splendid book called Greek Myths by the Dolaires, and it has great pictures in it of all the monsters. The Cyclops, who are the one-eyed race of giants who capture Ulysses on his way back from the Trojan War, and he gets away by blinding the Cyclops that has him in the cave. And then do you remember the Gorgons?
Do you
remember Medusa?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember her hair?
Oh, with all the snakes in it?
Her hair is all snakes, and what happens when anyone looks on her face?
They turn to stone.
Stone statues.
Right.
But Theseus manages to kill the Gorgon by fighting her with a mirror. And so he doesn't look at her face, he looks in the mirror. And there are many, many Greek myths with horrible monsters. And the Dolaire's Book of Norse Myths also has great pictures and stories about all the trolls and the three-headed giants and various other horrors. Back to the Greek myths, did you know that the first Spider-Man is in the story of Perseus? He is coming along on his way to Athens, and he is killing monsters right and left, and he gets up to the top of a mountain, up through very narrow valleys that radiate out from the top of the mountain. And at the top, he sees a great man sitting. And the man says, "And who art thou, fair fly, who hast walked into the spider's web? Bold fly, know you not that these glens are the web from which no fly ever finds his way out again? And this down," that's a sort of a little open clearing, "the spider's house, and I, the spider who sucks the flies? Come hither and let me feast on you, for it is of no use to run away. So cunning a web has my father Hephaestus spread for me when he made these clefts in the mountain through which no man finds his way home." And then Theseus comes on steadily, and he says, "And what is your name among men, bold spider? And where are your spider's fangs?" And the strange man laughed again. "My name is Periphetes, but men call me Coronides the club bearer. And here is my spider's fang." And he showed a mighty club of bronze. "And with it," he said, "I pound all proud flies till they give out their fatness and their sweetness." That hero was Theseus out of the retelling of the legend by Charles Kingsley, and it was Perseus that slayed the Gorgons, the Medusa, that turned everyone to stone.
Then there are all those medieval monsters.
I have a book called A Bestiary that shows many, many pictures of them.
Well, there are the hydras and the griffins and the manticores and the dragons.
All sorts of dragons. Millions of dragons of all varieties.
And the fairy tale monsters, Beauty and the Beast, and all the giants and ogres. Princes constantly being turned into frogs.
And they were pretty monstrous to the princesses. They had to sleep with them, weren't they? Yes. And but the beast, you know, in Beauty and the Beast, he was a good beast. He was a good monster.
Yeah.
There's the tradition of the good monster, who is not only a horrible-looking thing, but has a good heart. And then when we get up to the modern monster stories, the first modern monster is Frankenstein. That story was written by Mary Shelley, who was married to the poet Shelley, and she was only 19 years old. She wrote it over 160 years ago, and the story of how that is written is very interesting. It was a rainy, cold summer, and they were sitting around in a cottage at Lake Geneva in Switzerland, Shelley and Byron and several other people and Mary Shelley, and to amuse themselves, they were talking about ghost stories and reading ghost stories, and they said, let's have a contest and see who can write the best ghost story. And Shelley tried, and Byron tried, and a doctor named Polidori wrote, actually, the first modern vampire story, although the Greeks had vampires. And Mary couldn't think up a story. And then listening to stories about dead people that they were telling that had come to life, she went to bed, and she had a dream. And here is how she describes her dream. I saw with shut eyes but acute mental vision the pale student of unhallowed arts kneeling beside the thing he had put together. I saw the hideous phantasm of a man stretched out, and then on the working of some powerful engine so show signs of life and stir with an uneasy, half-vital motion. Frightful must it be, for supremely frightful would be the effect of any human endeavor to mock the stupendous mechanism of the creator of the world. His success would terrify the artist. He would rush away from his odious handwork. Horror-stricken, he would hope that, left to himself, the slight spark of light which he had communicated would fade, and this thing which had received such imperfect animation would subside into dead manner, and he might sleep in the belief that the silence of the hideous corpse, no, the silence of the grave, would quench forever the transient existence of the hideous corpse which he had looked upon as the cradle of life. He sleeps, but he is awakened. He opens his eyes. He beholds the horrid thing standing at his bedside, opening his curtains and looking at him with yellow, watery, but speculative eyes. And then, when she writes her story, it starts out, "It was a dreary night in November that I beheld the accomplishment of my toils." And then it doesn't tell very much about the making of Frankenstein, but then he comes alive and... actually, Tim, you know that the monster has no name. Frankenstein is the mad scientist,
right.
And it's only in later movies and things like that that we have come to call the monster Frankenstein. Frankenstein is the man, and he says, "How can I describe my emotions at this catastrophe, or how delineate the wretch with whom such infinite plans and cares I had endeavored to form? His limbs were in proportion, and I had selected his features as beautiful." Beautiful! Great God! His yellow skin scarcely covered the work of muscles and arteries beneath. His hair was of a lustrous black and flowing, his teeth of a pearly whiteness, but these luxuriances only formed a more horrid contrast with his watery eyes that seemed almost of the same color as the dun white sockets in which they were set, his shriveled complexion and straight black lips.
None of my dreams are ever that interesting.
Because now, you know, we all see Boris Karloff as Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And it's not like the movie, the book. The movies are good and fun, but the book is fun. And Frankenstein, I mean, the monster himself is not evil at the start. He is a gentle sort of monster. But then when he sees how the world receives him and how he is rejected on account of his hideousness, why, then he is enraged. And that is why he becomes a horrible monster. You see, even his mother, Frankenstein, that created him, his creator, rejects him. And that's what makes him awful, awful. Well, since then, there have been many, many imitations of Frankenstein and monster stories. It was only 80 years ago that Count Dracula came into existence in the most famous vampire story that we have. And now, of course, we have the movies, which can show monsters in action. Frankenstein and Dracula are great favorites. Yeah. What are your favorite monster movies, Tim?
The Japanese Godzilla.
And what about
movies.
The Japanese ones where they have great insects flying around
oh, yeah.
and destroying everything? Have you seen King Kong?
I didn't see the last one. I've seen the original King Kong.
The original King Kong. Right. I'd love to see that. How about Teenage Werewolf?
No, I've never had
The Mummy,
the
where he
pleasure
comes out and wound up all around.
Well, I started
his Egyptian grave.
I started to watch it, but it was on late, and I fell asleep. So I,
how about the vegetable monsters?
Well, I saw the Attack of the Mushroom People. That was a good one.
Did you see the movie The Fly Man, where a scientist discovers how he can move bodies from one place to another, and so he moves his own body from one glass case to another glass case, but there is a house fly in
right,
the glass
right.
case.
I fell asleep during that one, too.
Oh, come. You mean the monster movies don't keep you awake? How about in Star Wars, all those monsters that were at the bar?
Yeah, that was a good one.
All
I like that one.
All strange creatures from supposedly from this or that or the other planets.
Yeah, I stayed awake. I paid $2.50 to see that, so I'm going to stay awake for that one.
There are many, many books about monsters, some for very little kids. Morris Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are caused quite a stir when it first came out because people said children would be scared of it and children shouldn't be scared of it and, you know, they shouldn't have scaredy books. And yet kids loved Where the Wild Things Are. And over here in Jacksonville, a man named Mr. Crow has written a story called Clyde Monster, where Clyde is afraid to go to bed because children might get him. Have you seen that book?
No.
And some books you wouldn't think would be monster books turn out to be. When Elspeth was a little girl and we read Bedtime for Frances, she didn't like the father when he was saying, "Humph," and rolling over and being very angry at Frances when she was waking him up in the middle of the night. And he was a monster to Elspeth, and she would put her hand over the picture of the father so that she wouldn't see him being a monster. Then there's the marvelous, marvelous dragons in Ursula Le Guin's The Earthsea Trilogy. And how about all the other monsters from outer space in your sci-fi books? John Christopher's The City of Golden Lead, where first they think the monsters are the tripods, which are great metal creatures that walk around on three legs. But when the heroes get into the City of Golden Lead, they discover that inside the tripods live the real monsters, who are great green pyramid-shaped creatures called the Masters, and they have three little feet, one on each corner, and they rule everybody.
Have you ever written any monster books, Jackie?
Well, I've got three monster books, actually. One is called Georgia and the Guck, and the Guck is a great garbage eater who swallows up Georgia the way we're swallowed up now, but Georgia
right.
gets away in the end, Tim.
You watch out for that fish coming down.
And another one is The Endless Pavement, and there the monster is a huge automobile called the Great Computermobile, who rules all the people and all the automobiles. And then my best monster, I think, is in The Ghost Boat, and this is a monstrous corpse. And here is how the children describe the corpse of the dead fisherman. And there was a slow, very slow current that moved through the tunnel, and when after 3 days the corpse started to rise again, Janice is talking, like corpses do, it couldn't rise beyond the roof of the tunnel. And so the corpse bumped and rolled slowly along the ceiling in the current, and the rocks tore off his rotting clothing and scraped off his nose and sanded off his skin. Kenny, in an eerie voice, took up the tale. And the crawfish ate out his eyeballs till there were only the empty eye sockets. And the skin of his fingers peeled away from the flesh, starting at the tips like transparent banana peels. And then the flesh, the muscles, and the stuff of his fingers stripped off the finger bones and hung like wet noodles, said Betsy. And his ears, Marcy went on, were all nibbled and notched and scalloped and black from the snails eating them like lily pads. And he had a half-dissolved tongue coated with green slime, Thad said, and it hung from his fleshless mouth with the blood veins dripping out like half-chewed stalks of red celery. Janice resumed the story. And then the tunnel ended and the corpse was free, and it rose slowly, slowly up through the murky black water, and it broke the surface and it bobbed around all bloated like an inflatable mattress. And it was coated with big, fat, slimy bloodsuckers and crawling creatures and with a skin of green ooze and scum and algae. For it had come up in a little lake called Pleasant Lake, not in the main part of the lake, though, but in the green swamp, the landlocked one over behind the willow patch. And it floated around in the swamp, and the huge bullfrog sat half submerged in the caved-in stomach cavity, catching the flies that swarmed madly around, and poisonous pink toadstools grew on its cheeks and chin, and the maggots crawled in and out of its nose holes, and the fungus that grew on what was left of its ears looked like purple cauliflowers. And then they found it, and nobody ever knew how it got there when the fishermen had drowned in Lauderdale Lake's lake months before. And so that is the story where the kids are trying to scare other kids as they sit around in the dark telling ghost stories. Tim, what's the fascination with monsters?
Well, I don't know exactly. I think if you watch a monster movie, you can escape from everything around you and just concentrate on this thing and be scared. People do like to be scared.
Why do we like to be scared? Do we like to be scared if we're really scared? If there's any real danger? Have you ever been really scared?
Yeah, and that, you know, being really scared is not what people go for when they see a monster movie. They like the fascination of knowing that, wow, maybe this could be, but then back in their minds they know that it couldn't.
Do we really believe in monsters, do you think? I think little kids do.
Yeah,
after all,
little
the whole
kids
world
do.
Is filled
right.
with giants.
Right.
And very capricious giants, the grown-ups.
Right.
That do all sorts of horrible things. And monsters, of course, aren't always monstrous. Sometimes we try to defang them. There are all sorts of books in Lincoln Library and in most libraries. Just go in and ask them for monster books. And before we're finished, Tim, I want to read another little story here from Harvard Park. I want to mention The Lepen Monster by Chris Kolker, who is in Mrs. Mayall's class, because she talked about a pretend monster. The Lepen Monster, he was sometimes nice, but when he lost his temper, he lost a few people on Earth. He lived in Joey Larson's bedroom by the bed. Lepen was Joey's pretend monster. And then she goes on to tell the story of the pretend monster. But here's one by Scott Hansen. "Ha," I said as I put the last piece in place. "Now we are ready." "Ready for what, master?" asked Igor. "Well, do you know what's under the cloth on this table?" "No, what?" "My greatest creation." "Oh." "It is the world's worst monster," I said. "It will raise havoc all over the city. Then I will make an army and will conquer the world." "Ah, ha, 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 ha. Now look at it." And with that, Igor and I ripped off the sheet. There lay an ugly monster. Its skin was yellow-green, its hair was a strange blue, and its whole face glowed with a purple light. His eyes were bloodshot, and his body was covered with scales. He had wings that were like that of a bat, and he could detach them from his arms. "Now we put him on the juice table and bring him to life." Igor and I put him on the table. Then suddenly my oldest robot came out. He was all blue, and I told him to flip the life switch. Then the monster said, "I thank you for making me alive. I think I will go out and help all the world and make everyone happy." Igor and I groaned. "Failure number 351, Igor said. "Well, back to the drawing board." And that was Scott Hansen in Mr. Jack's class at Harvard Park School, Springfield.
Jackie, it's starting again. The monster wails, the stomach juices. I'm being sucked towards an intestine. Quick, what should the reading and writing and radio listeners write on today?
Hang on a second longer, Tim. What would you like to write on if you could live to write?
Well, I'd like to invent a monster.
Okay, my favorite sci-fi author Ursula Le Guin says, build your own alien or monster. Make it a being thoroughly disgusting in all human terms, and then present its point of view. So one idea, do your monster story either about a monster and what happens, or tell it as the monster sees it, how the monster feels about things. Or you could tell us true stories about when you were scared by monster stories or movies, or believed in a monster, Or you could tell us why you like monster stories or why you like to be scared.
And then I'd want to do that other idea of Ursula Le Guin's, the Build a Monster game.
What's the Build a Monster game?
Well, you build a monster by using stuff around the house.
Or school. Or everybody brings something weird from home, right?
Right. Anything. Lampshades, music stands, ivy plants, twigs, wire, bottle caps. Everybody contributes something to build the thing.
And then, after it's all built, then what?
Then everybody writes a story using the thing in it, and every story will be different.
Well, those stories better describe the thing, or we won't know what each thing from every classroom looks like. Maybe the teacher will take a picture and send it so we'll see what it's looking like.
I'm slipping.
Into an intestine. Goodbye, Jackie.
Goodbye.
I'm right behind you, Tim. It's got me, too. Goodbye, Tim, and thank you.
WSSR has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.